Congratulations. You found it.
You know what time it is.
This is New York Game Day. It's 3 hours of the most informative and entertaining NFL news in the league. Now here's former NFL defensive lineman Chris Canty, former Jets GM and ESPN insider Mike Tannenbaum, and your host, Anita Marks.
Welcome in. It is New York Game Day here on 98.7 ESPN. Chris Canty, not with us today. With us in spirit, as always, it's Anita Marks and Mike Tannenbaum on 98.7 ESPN with you for the next 3 hours. Getting you ready is we've got the Giants sitting 0-5. They lost to Dallas last week. Unfortunately, more turnovers from Danny Dimes. And now they're going up against Washington. No Lorenzo Carter. The Jets 0-5. They lose to the Cardinals last week, 30-10. No Le'Veon Bell. He's gone. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Joe Flacco starting, and they are in Miami this week, getting ready to take on a Miami Dolphins team that is still trying to have hopes and aspirations that they make it to the postseason with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Without further ado, Mike Tannenbaum joins us on the show. Mike, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Anita. How are you?
I've got a little bit extra pep in my step today. I don't know if it's because I feel really good about my picks today. I don't know if it's because, you know, we've got, a nice slate of games that that we have in front of us today. I mean, listen, when you've got Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers going at it, and that's the premier 4 o'clock game later on this afternoon. And when was the last time, Mike, we've said, wow, can't wait to see that Browns-Steelers game. That's going to be a competitive game. It's been a hot second since we've said that. So there's some, I'm really intrigued. I mean, what a treat on Monday night. Are you kidding me? Kansas City and Buffalo and Arizona against Andy Dalton and the Dallas Cowboys. How are they going to rebound without, I mean, it's just, I'm really excited for week six.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is the start of part of the season where things are starting to come a little bit into focus in terms of what looks like will be meaningful games, and you just touched on a whole bunch of them. And you know, from an X and O standpoint, I think the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game is really going to be strength against strength when you think about Cleveland's offensive line and their rushing attack led by Bill Callahan, the arguably the best offensive line coach in the NFL, against a really, really good front seven of Pittsburgh. And you talked about the game tomorrow night, you know, when you talk about Buffalo, who we all think will be there till the end in the AFC against the powerhouse of the Chiefs. So great couple of days of football coming up.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's kick it off first and foremost with the Jets, because I think it's one of the biggest storylines. And that is, of course, Le'Veon Bell no longer here. He is gone and expected to join the Kansas City Chiefs next week. So, you know, I'm curious to get your thoughts as a general manager, Mike. I mean, you know, Joe D and Adam Gase, they trade Jamal Adams. Of course, no control over C.J. Mosley this season. You know, it's an individual's choice to opt out of a season because of COVID-19. I'm not going to criticize anyone for that. I totally get it. If you're scared, say you're scared. And I've been more cautious than most, so I understand that. A ton of injuries. Injuries have hit a lot of teams. But it's just like the season goes from bad to worse, bad to worse, bad to worse. And I'll even go back to last year when Sam Darnold came down with mono. I just feel like there is a dark cloud hovering over that Jets franchise. And now, again, without Lev Bell, it's obvious that Mike Maccagnan, Joe D wasn't here, but made the wrong decision in bringing him in. Your thoughts on this Jets organization and where they sit right now?
I was really disappointed to see this, Anita. I thought we could go back to Jamal Adams, and you could say that the way this team was constructed, that you had a lot of money in C.J. Mosley, and you don't want to put too much money down the middle of your defense because eventually you got to pay some corners. You got to get better corners in here. And Ashton Davis really intrigues me. They have Bradley McDougal coming in the trade, and they have Marcus May, who's, you know, a good safety, not obviously Jamal Adams, but a guy that they could certainly line up and play with. So I understood that trade from a cap standpoint, a strategic planning standpoint. Made a ton of sense to me. This one doesn't, and I was really disappointed because when you're as bereft in weapons as the New York Jets currently are, you have to make this work. And maybe he's not the same player, and we could say, you know, Mike Maccagnan, he overpaid, and maybe he was betting against, negotiating against himself all those things are possibly and in all likelihood probably true. I mean, we've all made mistakes when you sit in that seat. No one's ever going to bat 1,000, and I certainly didn't. But to pay somebody $28 million for 17 games, that's not acceptable. But if I'm Adam Gase and I need a win as badly as I do, this guy helps me get a win. And I don't know. I really thought they were going to figure out a way to make this work. And I'm disappointed that they didn't. And you can't tell me that they're a better team right now with LaMichael Perine and Frank Gore as their running backs. And I love Frank Gore, by the way. So somehow, some way, you got to figure out how to make it work when you need to score points. And this is arguably one of your two or three players on defense and you don't.
You know, I hosted my show last night from 4 to 7, took a lot of calls from Jets fans. And, you know, here's the thing. This season, as we know, I mean, both for the Giants and the Jets, they're sitting 0-5. Like, season's a wash. Season's over. Well, maybe not for people, maybe not for the Giants, just because they play in arguably probably one of the worst divisions in the history of the NFL, where that stands right now. But for the Jets, I really do believe the future is bright, Mike. And, you know, obviously a lot is hinging on, do they keep Adam Gase? Do they let Adam Gase go? But the number of picks that Joe D has stockpiled, and I apologize for asking you a question that you might not have an answer to. I don't typically do that, and it's okay if you say you don't know. But, like, do you know what the salary cap situation is for the Jets heading into 2021?
Yeah, they have a ton of flexibility. Obviously, it's, you know, now that they're not paying Jamal Adams, Le'Veon Bell's injury guarantee is off. They're going to have to make a decision on Sam Darnold. And they do have picks, and I think Joe Douglas has done a good job with that. You know, a couple of factors. One is you really don't know where that other first-round pick's going to be, because if Seattle takes a deep run, you know, if you say they have two first-round picks and the second pick is 15 and you're picking the top five, like, that's tremendous. If that other first-round pick is closer to 32, that doesn't look nearly as good. So I like having the picks, but you got to win games. Like, those draft choices are great, and that's great for ownership and the front office, but right now you got to win some games. You got to establish credibility, and there's a lot of players on this team, young players, that's your who you're trying to say, hey, like, this is what we stand for. This is our culture. I'll give you a great example, Anita. You know, you're very familiar with the South Florida area. I know you're a big, big sports fan. Let's talk about the Miami Heat for a second. They moved on from LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. They never pick once in the top 10, and they were just in the NBA Finals. That's about culture. That's about sustained success. That's not about future draft choices. It's about standing for something. And the other thing that really bothers me, that when I saw the Jets this week, and I had talked about this in the spring with the Jets, was Greg Williams' comments. They are fundamentally and completely unacceptable. You don't ever air out grievances in the public, especially in the New York media. And I made the comment on TV about, yeah, that's the Greg Williams tax. And they could be playing a lot better defensively. That has nothing to do with that Jet offense. Last week, they allowed 496 yards and 28 first downs. If I'm Greg Williams, I'm getting up there saying, I need to do a better job. And to me, this is really reminiscent of Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley, both of which are not with the Cleveland Browns anymore. And I was so disappointed. Greg Williams is a good coach. He should know better than that. It becomes a national story. So I think the draft choices are great, but that's for another day in time. This is about getting those young players better, getting Mekhi Becton better, getting Ashton Davis on the field, being competitive in games. And this is an organization that right now, not in 10 minutes, not in 10 weeks, Anita, they need a win badly to tamp the noise down, because if they don't, it's going to get worse. There's going to be more finger pointing, and that's not good for anybody.
You know, very interesting. And folks that are listening right now, if you're not aware, Greg Williams spoke to the media this week. This is why he doesn't have his coordinators, right, and his coaches talk to the media. And in a very subtle way, threw Adam Gase and the Jets offense under the bus. Let me ask you this, Mike, and you might know, does Greg Williams want to be a head coach in the NFL? You know, I mean, this is not twofold. Number one, the way that this defense is playing, not a good look for him, if that is a goal for him heading into 2021. him throwing Adam Gase, and exactly what you said, you know, you don't air your grievances, you don't air your dirty laundry. Again, not a good look for him if he's looking to be a head coach in 2021. I don't know what Greg Williams' aspirations are. I want to assume that he wants a head coaching job somewhere in the NFL. And, you know, this must be a very frustrating season for him. But anyone who follows football can see no Jamal Adams, no C.J. Mosley. Offense is suffering, 3 and out. Defense, there's not enough oxygen in the world for his defense. One thing after another, bad field position. Like, it's he didn't have to say it, right? Like, anyone who follows football and knows football, like, we know what the problem is, dude. You didn't have to say it. Do you think a lot of this is frustration because Greg wants a bigger role somewhere else?
Yeah, well, it's just not acceptable. You know, there's a great expression about generals in the Army, Anita. They eat last. They don't eat first. They eat last. And great leaders, the best ones I've ever been around, it's 100% their fault and 100% they're deflecting and distributing praise. And that's what leaders do. They accept blame and they give out praise and they make people gravitate to them. And that's what real leadership's about. What he did was fundamentally against all those things. So I don't know what his aspirations are. Candidly, I don't care. I just thought it was disappointing, and that would not be acceptable in any organization that I was part of. There's a time and a place to have very difficult decisions, discussions. Obviously, they're not playing well on either side of the ball right now. Clearly, if they could play better on offense, then that would certainly help their defense. I don't think anybody would disagree with Greg Williams on that. But to say that publicly to the media, you're basically just, you know, you're throwing gas on a fire, especially in the New York market. So I don't know what he was trying to accomplish. I was part of the Jets for 16 years, and we work really, really hard to try to keep things internal. And we were far from perfect. We had hard knocks and still had, you know, quite a bit of success, as you know, Anita. But I just don't know what you're accomplishing by airing grievances publicly.
And just to share a story, and I rarely do this, you know, quote unquote, when I played, but I will in this instance because I think you're absolutely right. You know, I had games where my offensive line was just a complete mess and I got totally just demolished in games. And post game, I would never call out my offensive line. You know, and I could have. I mean, you know, I barely had 2 seconds once the ball was snapped sometimes. And so it was impossible for me to even complete a pass. But never, ever, ever did I ever approach the media. Armando Salguera down there, you know, the guys who cover the Miami Dolphins. Those are the guys who came out and covered our teams. And I would never throw any players under the bus. And so you're absolutely right. And this was not a smart move on Greg Williams' part, especially here in New York. You make an excellent point there as well. I mean, this is one of the most brutal towns and cities when it comes to sports media. And I'm a part of that. I'm not criticizing our media people and my friends out there. But, you know, it's a lot more difficult here in New York than it is, let's say, in Cleveland or Cincinnati. Mike, Anita Marks with you. 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. We've got a number of people who want to chime in, Mike, and talk about the Jets. So let's continue to do that. We'll also dive into the Giants in this hour. Again, they are 0-5. They lose to Dallas, even though Dak Prescott, unfortunately, leaves the game because of an ankle injury. Our prayers go out to him and hopefully a speedy recovery for him. But Andy Dalton comes in and Danny Jones still throws an interception. And unfortunately, they lose the game. And I think one thing that's not being talked about a lot more this week is Lorenzo Carter. What a huge loss that is to that Giants defense, because, you know, they were having a hard time applying pressure and getting pressure to quarterbacks. Lorenzo Carter was a star in that regard. So they take a big hit in that regard this week, today against Washington.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, Anita Marks and Mike Tannenbaum with you, New York Game Day. Let's take a look inside the numbers, and this is brought to you by Coors Seltzer. What we do is we're going to take a tour around the NFL and talk about some of the top storylines. And there's a lot of really great matchups we're going to dive into. But let's kick off with this, Mike. And that is Cam Newton back for the Patriots against the Denver Broncos. You know, like I said, you know, on the shelf and what we saw from Brian Hoyer, and as hard as it is for me to say this, Jared Stidham, because you know I'm a huge Jared Stidham fan. It's evident this team is not the same without Cam Newton. And so he really has an opportunity today to come out and make a statement and just put that stamp on the fact that this is a Patriots team that very well could shore up a long-term deal with him and him be the quarterback for the next few years for this for the Patriots. Your thoughts, and what are you expecting from Cam Newton today against Denver?
Yeah, you know, Anita, I see it the same way that you do. I think this is a big storyline of the week from a standpoint of, look, they're 2-2, but if you think about it, they went down to the very last play against Seattle. And against the Chiefs, even though the final score was 26-10, it was actually a lot closer game than people realize. And, you know, that was with, you know, the hybrid of Brian Hoyer / Jared Stidham because of Cam Newton with COVID. So this is a team that is averaging 396 yards per game. That's eighth in the league. They're second in the league in rushing. I think they could throw it. I think they can run it. And when you look about, you know, on their defense, maybe outside of Tampa Bay, I think this is a team that may have the best secondary in the NFL. They're sixth in the league against third down. Their pass rush needs to improve, but they're young on that side of the ball. So I think this is a team that, despite having two losses, you know, again, it's still early in the pennant race here, but they hold serve today against Denver. Buffalo, you know, obviously has their work cut out for them against Kansas City. You know, Buffalo could be looking at their second loss here. So long way to go, but I think you're right, though. You know, we're going to start talking about the future more and more, and I think what we're going to talk about is, you know, how soon does New England sign Cam Newton to an extension? And I think what New England's done a great job of is, and when I've had the privilege of running a couple of teams, I always talked about every rock every day. And what I mean by that is, like, team building is truly a 365-day-a-year event, and so much is about free agency, so much is about the draft, and it should be, but you know, everyone was talking about, hey, New England needs to take Jordan Love, or, you know, what are they doing? And here's Cam Newton, and they got tremendous value. And I think sometimes, you know, we all rush to judge, you know, myself included, and, you know, fire this guy or this isn't working out. But here's New England, you know, very quietly going about their business. And here they are. They signed Cam Newton really, really late. And barring something unforeseen, they're going to be in this thing all the way until the end.
It is going to be very, very interesting to see how that division plays out. I mean, you know, Cam Newton and this Patriots team have exceeded my expectations for the start of the season, Mike. Not to, you know, again, I wasn't in any way, shape, or form assuming that Stidham was a better quarterback than Cam Newton. But I just thought that because of the COVID-19 and the pandemic, it was going to take more than a hot second for Cam Newton to really get a good grip of this offense and be able to execute the way that he has. And he has far exceeded and surpassed my expectations. So I think with the start that we have seen the Patriots have, I think it's going to come down to a really interesting race between them and the Buffalo Bills. And listen, don't sleep on this Dolphins team. You know, again, I think they bulldoze the Jets today. And I think they're going to be in the discussion for potentially maybe making it in as a wild card into the postseason,
Anita,
especially now that we have seven allowed now in the postseason as opposed to six. Yes.
I think this Jet-Dolphin game is going to be a lot closer. And let me tell you why. I think my sense of it is the Jets are going to get some of these skill players back. And it's one thing when we're talking about playing with the Chris Hogans of the world. I think this Jet offense is going to look a lot different today. And I think when we're on the radio a week from today, we're going to be talking about a very surprising competitive game. I could see the Jets, again, we haven't seen them with their full complement of players. And when they do, if Kyle Van Noy doesn't play, I think this game is a little bit closer than people think.
And interesting you say that, because the reports are that Van Noy is unlikely to go, but Shaq Lawson has a much better chance of going today against the Jets. So Van Noy, it does not look like he's going to go. So we'll see what happens there. Now, you know, again, two excellent games today. And let's start with the one at 1 o'clock, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. Now, Odell Beckham Jr. Earlier this week was not feeling well, was tested twice for COVID-19, and both tests came back negative, so he's expected to be active and attractive. Folks might not be aware of this. Listen, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have they played this year? Okay, the Giants, the Texans, the Broncos, and the Eagles. All four of those offensive lines, subpar. This will be the best offensive line that the Pittsburgh Steelers will be going up against, and they give up the fourth most explosive plays in the NFL, which really, really falls right into Odell Beckham Jr.'s wheelhouse. I think this is going to be a competitive game. I still think the Pittsburgh Steelers win, but I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to come down to a field goal, so I'm leaning more towards the Browns getting the hook at +3.5. But how do you envision this game playing out, Mike?
You know, one thing that's interesting is when you look at Cleveland's offense, those running backs have really carried the quarterback. You know, Baker Mayfield is playing okay, but really not great. And when you look at the other side of the ball here, Pittsburgh has a great defense. And I know they do give up some explosive plays, but overall, they're not great on third down. Opponents are converting 27. They're 27th in the league on opponents third down. Their opponents are at 50%, Anita. So, but it is strength against strength. I think, again, Bill Callahan has been an incredible addition to the Cleveland Browns. Hats off to Kevin Stefanski, who's really, I think, just tamped the noise down. We're not talking about all this chatter about the Cleveland Browns, which is where they want to be, especially if I'm a Brown fan. But again, I think when you look at Baker Mayfield, if you really take a closer look at things, very pedestrian. You know, they average under 200 yards a game in passing. So it's going to be strength against strength, but I think it's really going to be more about Kareem Hunt and running the ball. And then on the other side, if I'm Pittsburgh, I am double and triple teaming Myles Garrett on every single snap because he covers up for a lot of the deficiencies that Cleveland has on their back end. And when you look at them defensively, they're also struggling on third down. Their opponents are converting 46.8%, and they do a great job of, Cleveland does, of affecting the passer. That's really led by Myles Garrett. But if I'm Pittsburgh, if I could defend him, I think I have a real chance to move the ball. And we haven't even had a chance yet, Anita, to talk about Chase Claypool, another Pittsburgh Steeler wide receiver that they drafted and hit on.
Yeah, I mean, what is it about their scout department? They're spot on when it comes to wide receivers, that's for sure. I mean, yeah. And by the way, Deontay Johnson out today because of a back issue. So, man, you thought Claypool got targeted last week. Man, what a great start in fantasy, by the way, if you did pick him up off the waiver wire. And also another guy that I like today is James Washington. I expect James Washington to get some love from Ben Roethlisberger. Here's a concern. I'm curious because I just talked about this on Daily Wager just a few minutes ago for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Offensive guard David DeCastro is out today, and a rookie is stepping in. Let's not forget the last time these two teams faced each other was Myles Garrett and the whole helmet situation. Good luck with that rookie going up against Myles Garrett, who we know is going to be playing with a little extra juice today against this Pittsburgh Steelers team. Keep that in mind. I think in the trenches, I think the Cleveland Browns win the battle on both sides of the ball, Mike.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, DeCastro is a great player. There's no question about it. I give Mike Tomlin so much credit. You know, the more, you know, I'm sitting in the seat and I get a chance just to look at, you know, 32 teams every week and maybe have some time to look at other press conferences that ordinarily I wouldn't. You know, I used to really admire Mike Tomlin. It's even at a higher level now. I think he's such a great coach, class act. I think he's a true ambassador of what we want pro football to be about. And to be specific, you know, this is a big game, and it's easy to, you know, drum up, you know, the unfortunate incident of what happened last year, but, you know, Mason Rudolph is hanging on by a thread to be a pro football player. He's really, let's just call it what it is, he's a non-factor. He's really not good enough at all as a player. And Myles Garrett paid a huge, huge penalty for what happened. And Mike Tomlin tamped it down, focused on the game. You're bringing up a great point, Anita. You know, the Steelers are without a really good guard, and that's where the discussion should be, and it'll be a good game, and I'm glad that we're not really talking about what happened last year.
Some other top storylines heading into week 6. And that is the fact that Andy Dalton is now the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Very unfortunate what happened with Dak Prescott, but Andy Dalton is stepping in. Listen, I've been watching you and a number of analysts all over, you know, the airwaves this week talking about, oh, you know, this team, they don't take as much of a hit with Andy Dalton. I'm sorry, BS. I'm not buying it, okay? There's a reason why Andy Dalton's no longer a starting quarterback in the NFL. You know, I was very... When Andy was in Cincinnati, I knew that staff extremely well. Andy's got some issues when it comes to the mental aspect of the game and the nervous factor. And you and I both know this. It's very different for a backup quarterback to get that call in the game when the starting quarterback goes down. Oh my gosh, grab your helmet. We need you in. Okay, I'm in. Now, when a quarterback has an entire week, Mike, to fester, to marinate, not sleeping at night, not eating, nervous, big stage. This is Big D, baby. This isn't Cincinnati. This isn't the Queen City. So I'm not buying into the whole Andy Dalton, oh, this team doesn't take a step back. No, I'm not buying it at all. Defense can't stop a runny nose. And I think the Cardinals rolled today. I'm curious, what are your thoughts about Andy Dalton and this Dallas team moving forward?
I think they become more balanced. I think C.D. Lamb's going to be a star. Michael Gallup made some incredible catches last week. And, oh, by the way, they got some guy named Amari Cooper. So they have a lot of weapons. And I think Andy Dalton is going to be a guy that's going to have to be more of a point guard. I don't know if we'll see the explosiveness that Dak brought. But, you know, look, hard to say that right now, given the inconsistencies of Carson Wentz. Is Andy Dalton and the Dallas Cowboys not the best team for this year, you know, in the NFC East? Again, I'm not saying that it's for the next 5 years, but I think, look, their defense is horrendous. Totally agree with that, Anita. But as it relates to this game against Arizona, I think it's going to be very high scoring, and I think Dallas still has a very good chance of winning the division. And I think Dalton just has to play smart football. He needs to be a point guard and just get the ball out of his hands and distribute it, because they got some great skill players.
Hey, let's bring in a caller for this storyline segment. Again, this is Inside the Numbers, brought to you by Coors Seltzer. Let's go to Sal in Dutchess, because he wants to chime in on Andy Dalton. Sal, curious to get your thoughts. What are your expectations for Andy Dalton today?
Yes, good morning, Anita and Mike, and thank you for taking my call. My thoughts from the beginning, I always thought that Zach was asking for too much money for not doing too much. But that's beside the point. Now, I always thought Andy Dalton was the kind of player who'll take whatever the defense gives him. And my thing was that Prescott was trying to throw downfield all the time. Yes, he's got good receivers. He's got great receivers. But I think he was trying to get all them yards so he could impress the bosses so he could get the money. Like, he wants to keep up with the Rodgers, the Breeze, Mahomes, and all that stuff. Now, that's why, you know, every time he throws downfield, I think that he's taking a big risk. And, you know, he goes three and out. And that's why maybe the defense is not playing that good, because the defense gets tired. And that's just my opinion. And I don't know how you guys think.
Sal, thanks for the phone call. Mike?
No, those are all really good points. I see it very similarly, and should be a competitive game. I don't know, Anita, do you see it differently?
I think it's going to be a competitive game. I really like Murray a lot. Against that, here's the thing. A balanced offense for Dallas is fair. I can see that. Like, they're going to rely more on Ezekiel Elliott. But I just, with the amount and the pace that I think Arizona and Murray and Hopkins are going to be able to score on this Dallas defense, I don't believe a balanced offense without the explosiveness of what Dak can bring to it, they're going to be able to have enough time of possession to put up the points to stay up with the Murrays. That's what I think.
You know, one thing that I thought the caller made a really good point about Zeke Elliott's contract situation. If you go back 2 years ago and we do an autopsy on their salary cap, I think the call makes a great point, which is I do think Zeke asked for too much money, and I do think that they paid him too soon. And the one player that they could have kept because of it, in my opinion, that they didn't, that is consequential right now, is Byron Jones. So if you're Dallas, mm-hmm. wouldn't you love to have Byron Jones right now defending DeAndre Hopkins? So I think the caller makes a really good point, yep. and I think the threads of losing Byron Jones goes back to the fact that Zeke Elliott held out, goes to Cabo, and what does Jerry Jones say? That's okay. We're going to reward that behavior. You know, Anita, that'd be like you showing up today late, leaving early, not being prepared, and then you going to the people at ESPN saying, I need more money, and they say, you know what? That's great. We're going to give it to you. And when you reward the wrong behavior from a management standpoint, you're just creating other problems because people are watching that. So you just can't reward that behavior of him leaving and then saying, you know what? That's okay. We're going to pay you more money. And then you see a good player like Byron Jones. And, you know, we talk about Miami so far. One of the reasons Miami's playing well is Byron Jones is an excellent corner. And I think it's made Miami better and Dallas worse.
Yeah. And talking about quarterbacks, one last topic that I want to touch on, and we'll get to some more calls as well, is Justin Herbert continues to impress. By the way, at one point in time, you could have wagered that Justin Herbert, Rookie of the Year, you could have gotten that 29-1. Mike, right now it's +125. And here's the thing. Look at the schedule. The Chargers have the 7th easiest schedule moving forward in the NFL. They play the Jets. They play the Falcons. They play Denver twice. Games that are going to set up for Justin Herbert to just look fantastic. So, little nugget for you guys. Hashtag run, don't walk. It won't be plus money. It won't be. They're on a bye this week, okay? But after this week, once they get back in action, it's not going to be plus money. How confident are you that Justin Herbert's going to win Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year this year, Mike?
Anita, you could ask me that question today on October 18th of 2020. You could watch that video I sent you when I said last year that I would have drafted him over Burrow and Tua. I've been talking about this mm-hmm. for a year. And Justin Herbert is a great player. He is high character. He looks like Ben Roethlisberger. He can make all the throws. He's really smart, so he can sort through coverages. And if they should have won the game last week against the Saints. So this is a guy I've been talking about for 2 years. He very well could be the best quarterback coming out this past year, and it may not even be close, because if you take Andrew Luck's mind and put it on Ben Roethlisberger's head with Tom Brady's processing information, you may have Justin Herbert.
Wow. Look at you playing quarterback Frankenstein over here.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I went to watch him for 2 years, and, you know, when you talk to the people at Oregon, you know, he was a TA as an undergrad. He has impeccable character. He is much bigger than you realize, and he's fast, and he outruns leverage, and he has a cannon for an arm. So what am I missing here? Like, what am I missing?
No,
I don't
you're,
know.
You're,
like,
you're
why
not.
Was he there? Why was he there at 6? Like, it still makes no sense to me. Like, we have such East Coast bias, and I just think if he had played in the SEC, we'd be talking about a totally different player.
Yeah, listen, you're preaching to the choir, and I've said it, and I know I'm from Miami, born and raised down there in Kendall, went to Sunset Senior High School, went to University of South Florida in Tampa, right? Like, I got in this business, Dan Marino was still the quarterback, and I was covering Duper and Clayton. I was going to Miami games when they were still playing at the Orange Bowl. Okay, I have ticked off a lot of Dolphin fans down there, and I will say it again. They will regret not taking Herbert and taking Tua over Herbert. They will regret it. No, you haven't seen Tua play yet. It's not about that. I'm sure Tua is going to be great. It's the longevity of his career and the risk of injury, and I think it's another, they missed out. They missed out on Drew Brees. Oh, yeah, it's going to be one of those, you missed out on Herbert. I think that's going to be the case. 800-919-3776. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. Mike and I are going to dive into the Lev Bell discussion and take a deeper dive and discussion in regard to this Jets team moving forward in the future. Mark Dale, Brooklyn, Jimmy, hang tight. We'll get to your calls. Also, coming up in hour three, Bram Weinstein is going to join us from Washington. We'll dive into that Giants-Washington game. We really haven't spent a lot of time talking about that matchup. I'd like to do that. Excited to have Bram on the show. We have our can or can't he, Mike Tannenbaum style, which will be fun. And we have my locks of the week. I went 2-1 last week. I lost to the Colts. Or I lost with the Colts, I should say. I won Carolina in the teaser with Pittsburgh and Arizona. I'm 9-8 on the season. I know nothing to write home about, but I feel really good about today's slate of games.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. I can't be running around that open strip. Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Sorry, I stepped on the dude's shoes. Anita Marks, Mike Tannenbaum, and you, hour three of New York Game Day. Inside the numbers, brought to you by Coors Seltzer. Coors Seltzer. Coors Seltzer is looking for volunteers to help save our rivers. Whatever you're doing, if you drink a Coors Seltzer, you're volunteering. Each 12-pack sold will help restore 500 gallons of river water. Drink a seltzer. Help save the Hudson River. Details at CoorsSeltzer.com. Without further ado, Bram Weinstein joins us. Good friend. I was on his show earlier today, or I said earlier this week after I teed it up over at, where was I? I was at Forest Hills Fieldhouse. Really, really nice out there. And so, you know, he's returning the favor. So, Bram, welcome in. On with Anita Marks and Mike Tannenbaum. How you doing this morning?
Good. How are you all?
Great. Great. Excited for week six. First and foremost, before we start talking X's and O's, let's talk about your head coach, Ron Rivera. I know he's battling cancer. God bless him. How's he doing?
So, you know, we don't know exactly. It was clear a couple of weeks ago, if you had watched them against the Ravens, that he was really fatigued on game day. He's gotten IVs at halftime. He has missed practices. The good news is he has one more round of chemotherapy, and that will be over until the doctors tell him otherwise. And then hopefully there will be an improvement for him week to week. But, you know, like most coaches, he's not sharing a lot about his personal health information other than to say he's getting through it.
Bram, how about the matchup for today in terms of Chase Young, Montez Sweat against the two tackles for the Giants that are struggling? It just seems like on paper this is going to be a really good matchup for Washington.
So we are deeming that down here our only hope because that is the matchup that they better dominate today. As you all know, Washington, not unlike New York, is an incomplete roster. They've made a lot of changes on offense. They are struggling really hard to score. I think Giants defense probably been a little bit better overall than I think people thought it would be, at least in terms of like yards allowed, long drives. Washington struggled to put really anything together. And it really feels like today, if they're going to be successful against New York, that rookie tackle is struggling so far. And Sweat has been outstanding. I know Chase Young has gotten a lot of the headlines, and he should. He's been as good as advertised. But on the edge, Washington has what appears to be a massive advantage, and they better take advantage of it.
Bram, what about Landon Collins? You know, it didn't end well for him here. You know, talk about his role on this defense, and do you feel that he's going to come in with a little bit more swag considering he's going up against his old team?
So he's actually had a bad year down here. He was very good last year on a bad defense, one that was blamed on its coordination and less about the talent that it had. This year, the back end of Washington's defense, this was going into last week, so the stats are a little bit different. I'd have to look it up. I'd actually never seen this before. They were like 7th in yards allowed and 22nd in points allowed. And they don't have a ton of turnover. So it's not like pick sixes or things like that are kind of altering the scoreboard and making it look worse than it is. The defense is giving up all the points. So they have been wildly inconsistent. Like, there are times, and I'm sure it'll happen today because of the matchup on the edge, they're like electric, dominant up front. They'll push people backwards for a couple of drives, and you're like, whoa. And then they'll have a couple drives where they can't stop anything on the back end. Their secondary is liable to give up big play after big play. They've given up a ton of them this year. It's happened in every single game. It happened last week with the Rams, who don't throw the ball downfield very much. It happened against the Cardinals with Andy Isabella. It happened with the Ravens multiple times. Tight ends are a problem, which is good news for New York today. And Landon Collins is a big part of that. He's missed a lot of tackles this year. The person he's playing with, Troy Apke, I think most people believe really isn't a starting safety. And they've tried some other combinations, but they just don't have the depth at that position. They are really, really, really hinged to their front being great and great constantly. Otherwise, they're vulnerable. And Collins has really been an answer for them so far this year.
Bram, one thing that's really interesting to me is I'm a big believer in communication isn't what's said, but what is heard. And just going back a couple of weeks on this Haskins thing, which is if you cobble together what Ron Rivera said about a month ago, he talked about Cam Newton. Cam Newton was a guy we're going to live with growing pains. You know, he had a lot of turnovers early in Carolina, but it was an investment and worked out. And everyone talks about Cam Newton's work ethic, always the first guy in. And he said, hey, you know, Dwayne Haskins, he's going to have bumps in the road, but it's an investment for us, you know, from Washington's perspective. And then 2 weeks later, he doesn't bench him. He makes him the third string quarterback. And that, to me, said a lot. You know, just being around the game, that said a lot to me. He didn't make him the backup. He made him the third string. And I just curious, can you give us any more insight into that dynamic?
So it has a lot more to do with what's happening, to your point about preparation, when you mentioned work ethic, Monday to Saturday than it does really on Sunday. Because consider when the benching occurred that, like, statistically, it was by far his best game. He was 32-45 for 315, which was a career high against the Ravens. And they did not lose to the Ravens because of anything he did. They gave up a fake punt. They gave up a 50-yard touchdown run by Lamar Jackson. Haskins did not turn the ball over. You know, and yet that was the time when they made a decision to bench him. So there's something going on that, you know, with COVID, I know less and less because the access to the building is very different for all of us this time around. But clearly this is largely about what he's bringing to the table in preparation for games, and they don't like what they've seen. But I'll even back you up further in terms of the inconsistency, which has been something that Ron Rivera's taken a lot of criticism for down here. Like, this was an unprecedented year for veteran quarterbacks available on a market. They didn't go get one, including Cam Newton, who was available and cheap. They didn't go get him. They didn't bring anybody in here to compete with him. They never thought in March that Alex Smith would actually have a chance to play again. Like, they did not put anything in this guy's way to be the starter. They gave him every rep in whatever that truncated summer was. They never let Kyle Allen have a rep with the ones, never once. All they did was publicly support him as the starter, and then it felt very out of the blue that the rug was pulled. So we're still kind of picking up the pieces to figure out what happened here. And there's a lot of us down here that look at him and go, all right, like, is he a bust? I don't know. Like, he's got a lot of talent. He's got a big arm. He's competitive. Yes, he can be inaccurate. Yes, he turns the ball over at times, but he's actually not – he's not like Daniel Jones turning the ball over. It's not like that with him. So there's a lot of question marks in terms of how this has been handled, why it's been handled the way it's been handled, and what's next. And it does feel like the end is kind of near. I just don't know what kind of market we're talking about over the next 2 to 3 weeks, where who is going to give up something of value for a guy who's likely not going to play for them immediately. So I think they're stuck with each other. And there's a lot of us down here that kind of hope that cooler heads prevail and they kind of start from scratch again. Because a lot of us that look at him and go, this guy's talented, it's not time to give up on him yet.
Bram Weinstein joining us here on 98.7 ESPN New York Game Day. Bram, really one of the silver linings this season, I think, for the Giants is the chemistry between Daniel Jones and Darius Slayton. What are your thoughts on that matchup, and how do you see the Washington team trying to slow Slayton down? Because he's having really a very impressive year so far.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like the toughest weapon to deal with on the outside. Kendall Fuller, since he's returned to the lineup, has been very good. Typically on the best receivers. He's got three interceptions in a couple of weeks, so he's had a very good start for them. The corners have been less the problem than the safeties on this team. And my bigger concern is Engram, frankly, because the tight ends are just destroying this team. And Mark Andrews destroyed them. Gerald Everett was destroying them. You know, like, this has gone on and on and on. When they played a team with a valuable tight end, they've had nothing to say. So with Slayton, he's been very good. I will trust Washington secondary and definitely their pass rush. The stuff underneath to the tight ends that I'm most concerned about today.
And, Brad, how about the other side of the ball? What can we expect from Washington's offense? You know, what do you think they're doing well right now?
Not much. You know, frankly, not much. Like, last week, they're going to make a change across their offensive line. Like, Brandon Sheriff is back, which is good news for them. Their Pro Bowl guard, he's missed 3 weeks now since week two. And they're going to make a change at left guard today for Wes Martin, who, if you go back and watch how many times he was forced to single block Aaron Donald last week, you're going to think a crime occurred to him. And he ended up losing his job over this. And Sadiq Charles, who was a mid-round pick for them, who they've worked at guard and tackle, will move in there. They haven't done a lot particularly well. Like, Antonio Gibson has got huge upside for them. You'll see a lot of him today as a receiver and a running back. He is learning how to play the running back position. It is still, like, something that's new to him. But he's terrific out of the backfield. And with Kyle Allen, I mean, frankly, we've gotten not even a half in, and there was no preseason, and we haven't seen a lot of him. All we do know is he's willing to put his body on the line, and he paid for it last week. So we'll have to see. And then McLaurin's the real deal. I mean, he's just been outstanding for them. You know, what are the 20-some games into his career? He's been outstanding. And when he gets the ball in his hands, he is tough to bring down. He's a great yards after catch player. And not unlike the connection that is there with Slayton, Allen is best served going to McLaurin because he's the true playmaker on the team.
And just as a follow-up to that, just curious, like, what's the level of confidence in Alex Smith if he had to go in and play? Obviously, last week was, you know, tough sledding, but given another week of preparation, like, it's an unbelievable story, Bram, but just if you could kind of finish the thought about where are they with Alex Smith?
So, like, I think they're as amazed as anybody that this happened, that he's put himself in this position. There was, as of even a week ago, which this is part of, like, going back to the surprise of Haskins being the third string. I mean, they were saying to us kind of quietly, like, there are a couple of other physical hurdles we'd like to see him cross before we feel really comfortable playing him. And yet there they were putting him in one play away, and there they were playing him for more than a half. And so he is not as mobile as he was. And as you all know, like, that was a big, big, big part of his game. And I think more than anything, he just wanted to make sure he could protect himself. But he was not typically a drop-back pocket quarterback. He moved. And there are still some limitations there. So as of a couple of weeks ago, there were still a couple of physical things that I won't be specific about, obviously, that they wanted to see him kind of cross for them before they feel comfortable, like, starting him. But they're not quite there yet, and I don't think anything's really changed, obviously, with Allen back as the starter here.
Interesting. Last question for me, for you, Bram, and that is, I'm looking at this division, the NFC East, right? Dallas 2-3, now Andy Dalton. I have Dallas losing to the Cardinals today. The Eagles 1-3, I have them losing to the Ravens today in excruciating fashion. And I have Washington 1-4. I have Washington beating the Giants today. And they very well now could advance to 2-4 and tie the Dallas Cowboys if they do lose to the Cardinals. And then, of course, the Giants then would be 0-6. And that Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes will continue for them. I'm curious, you know, how do you see this game playing out? How confident are you that Washington's going to win? And, you know, how optimistic is this team considering how horrible this division is?
So that's like, that was at least the initial reasoning that was given for the Haskins benching was, we have an opportunity in a crappy division. You know, it is what it is. And here come the Giants twice and the Cowboys. That's their next three games. And they didn't know at the time that Dak was going to get hurt, but that's now changed the dynamic as well. And so they figure if they're going to take a run at this thing and get to like an 8-8 division winner, the time is now, and that's why they did what they did. Obviously, there's more to it. With Haskins, I agree with you. I think Washington still, you know, oddly has a shot, you know, to win the division. I mean, I guess anybody does in week five. But, like, they oddly do. I understand that reasoning a little bit. They've already beaten Philadelphia. They're going to get their shot at Dallas next week. And I do like them today as well, if for no other reason than the first matchup that you guys brought up, which was on the edge, Washington is dominant with Young, Ed Sweat, and then Kerrigan coming in behind them. And the interior of their defensive line is very good, too. I think they caused a couple turnovers today, and they're going to somehow win this game. I'm not confident in them offensively yet, but this might be a week that they get a little bit better at what they do, and a second week for Kyle Allen if he gets through it. So I'm with you. I think they win this week. And then we'll see where they are, and then we'll see what happens with Dallas. That becomes an enormous game for the division next week.
Mike, any last questions for Bram before we say hasta la vista?
No, all good. Just last question. Who's the starting quarterback for Washington a month from now?
I still think it's Dwayne Haskins, but like, I know I'm really in the minority of that. Like, I think if things go south, that's why I want cooler heads to prevail, because I think – that's who they go back to towards the end of the year if that's what happens. If they are winning, it's Kyle Allen. So these next 3 weeks are enormous. Two games against the Giants, one against the Cowboys. They could win all of them. So he'll still be the quarterback at that point.
Bram, thank you so much for your time. I know you got a big day ahead of you. Now the voice part of the team covering the Washington team. So really, really blessed that you joined us this morning. Thank you, my friend.
All right, see you guys.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. It's everyone's favorite. Can he or can't he?
I'm saying I intend to take bets as soon as possible.
Really just a segment where we talk prop bets and lines.
All right. Unfortunately, Chris Canty is not with us today, so Mike Tannenbaum steps up for Can or Canty. Last time we did this, Mike, your son helped us out. I guess he's not available to you today?
Yeah, he's unfortunately in the middle of a lacrosse tournament. Well, fortunately for him and unfortunately for us, we're going to have to soldier on without him.
That's awesome. So true story, grew up, as you know, in Miami and knew nothing about lacrosse. Moved to Baltimore, Maryland in the early 20s. And I'll never forget, first time I went shopping, I went grocery shopping there. A lot of housewives were walking around with their sons and they're twirling these sticks in the air with this ball in this net. And I'm like, what is that? What are they doing? Had no idea. I mean, keep in mind, down in Florida, lacrosse wasn't offered when I went to high school. There was no lacrosse down in Florida. It was a Northeast thing. So, good friend of mine, Stan Charles, who's Josh Charles's uncle, by the way, if anyone used to watch The Good Wife, he calls into my radio show and he says, listen, I want to take you to your first lacrosse game. He takes me to Johnny Unitas Stadium at Towson University, and my first lacrosse game was Duke against Virginia, Mike. Unbelievable. Mike, I was screaming, yelling. I was like, this is awesome. Oh, my God. Like, this is amazing. So then now, fast forward 2 weeks later, I go to a females lacrosse game. And I'm like, what's going on? I don't understand. Why aren't they hitting one another? Where's the physicality? What's going on here? You know, obviously, again, you know, lacrosse 101, the women's game is a much different game. It's more of a finesse game. There's little to no physicality. And, you know, of course me, that's what I love about it. So lacrosse is awesome. And you know, folks, another thing I found out about is that as great of a football player Jim Brown was, people might not be aware of this, but Jim Brown is arguably the best lacrosse player that ever walk this planet. So anyway, great sport. And so I hope your son has a great tournament. All right. Do you want it? You want to dive into the Giants or the Jets matchup first?
Well, please, ladies first.
Well, what is that? Well, wait a minute. What do you mean ladies first? You tell me what game, you tell me what game you want to talk about first.
I'm deferring to you. I'm good either way. I'm ready to roll. So,
all right, let's go Giants because they play first. Okay. We just heard from Bram Weinstein. Josh Allen. Kyle Allen, over under 1.5 touchdown passes.
I'm going to say under.
You're going to say under? Why?
Because I think they're really struggling on offense. Really agree with a lot of what Bram said. I do like McLaurin long term, but this is a team that really struggled last week. I don't think the Giants have anywhere clear, anywhere close to the pressure players of the Rams, especially without Lorenzo Carter. But I need to see it to believe it. And I think the Giants overall defensively, they are getting better. They're playing with great effort. So I think, while they may be able to move the ball, I just don't see Kyle Allen scoring, having multiple touchdown passes today.
All right. With that being said, Daniel Jones over under 1.5 touchdown passes. Besides, of course, the interception, we're all planning on him throwing as well.
Under, way under. And here's why. You know, pro football is a game of matchups. And Washington has tremendous depth in the front seven. You know, Bram touched on it earlier. And Andrew Thomas, in my opinion, is surprisingly struggling. I thought that was a really good pick. And it's a game of matchups. And when you have Chase Young and Montez Sweat, that's hard for anybody. But Fleming and Thomas, that's not a good matchup. I just don't see the Giants being effective in passing the ball today.
All right, let's talk about some of the other skilled position players. You just said Allen under on 1.5 touchdowns, but what about Terry McLaurin, the guy that he's going to go to? 5.5 receptions, 71.5 receiving yards. What type of day do you expect McLaurin to have?
I'll go over the 71.5. I think, again, outside of Bradbury, I think the Giants are struggling in the secondary, and he's explosive, so he can make 2 to 3 big catches. And while I think the Giants will struggle, I think he can convert a short pass into a longer play. So, with McLaurin, I would say over. Even though it's, I don't think it's going to be a lot, I still think he'll be productive.
Okay. And then, of course, Darius Slayton. And his over-under is 56.5 receiving yards. And we just heard from Bram. Bram said with Fuller back, it's going to be a good matchup.
Yeah, and that's where I was getting confused. I think Slayton will be productive, even if they have to get the ball out of Jones's hands quickly. Anita may not have a lot of catches, but I think he can make a couple of explosive run-after-catch plays. So I think he'll continue to be – and this is one of the best stories for the Giants, by the way. I think Slayton's emerging as a bona fide starter in the NFL. With all the other issues they have, I think that's a position that they should feel good about.
And how about Ingram? Again, talking to Bram, he thinks that Ingram could have a big day. And right now, the over-under on his receiving yards is only 36.5. Thoughts on that?
I would go over. And let's give Dave Gettleman some credit. You know, sometimes you have to be disciplined and let some of the guys walk out your door. And, you know, that's always been one of the things about Landon Collins is, you know, how well is he in space? And candidly, you know, ironically, Jamal Adams, that would be the one flaw in his game is, you know, how well can he cover? So here's two high-profile safeties leaving both New York teams, and can they exploit that secondary, the safety position of Washington? So I like it. I expect a big day for Ingram.
Last but not least, Antonio Gibson, rushing and receiving yards. I think he's going to be a big factor here. I think he's going to have to be utilized. I think that he's going to get a lot of volume. Combined rushing and receiving yards, 80.5, over, under, Mike?
Over. I like Gibson. I liked him in college at Memphis. I think he's explosive. I think he's still transitioning to be a running back. But since you're saying it's rushing and receiving, let's go over.
Yeah, I like that as well. Okay, so those are your over and unders in regard to your Giants and your Washington game a little bit later on this afternoon. Only, how about that, Mike? Only 2 4 o'clock games. I mean, listen, you've got horrible Jets in Miami. Nobody's going to be watching that. Come on, let's be honest. Everybody's going to be watching the Packers and the Tampa Bay Bucks. But
Joe Flacco. I'm going to watch the Jets and the Dolphins.
Of course you are. I mean, come on. Of course you are. You're an outlier.
I think it's going to be an intriguing game. I really do. But obviously, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, that's, you know, the networks are very smart. Howard Katz and the NFL does an incredible job. And obviously, they want to have as many eyeballs on, you know, two future Hall of Famers. And that should be a great game as well.
Joe Flacco, over under 1.5 touchdown passes.
I'm going to go over because my sense is from what I'm hearing out of that building, they're going to get more skilled players back today than people realize. And because of that, I think they're going to be able to move the ball. No Kyle Van Noy for Miami. Look for a high-scoring game.
Here's one of my favorite bets, by the way. People don't realize how mobile Joe Flacco is for a guy that seems like he's a statue back there. over 5.5 rushing yards for Joe Flacco. Dude, against Chase Young? I mean, come on. I mean, is that not... That might be the bet of the week right there, Mike. Over 5.5 rushing yards for Joe Flacco?
Absolutely. Totally agree. And you talked about it earlier, which is, you know, this connection with Joe Douglas in Baltimore. And, you know, he knows Flacco well. I thought Joe Flacco played well last week. I really did. You know, didn't necessarily show up in the stats, but he's a full field quarterback. Like you said, Anita, he's an underrated athlete. So I think he's a good player. And we talked about it going back to August and early September, which is this was an underrated signing for the Jets, because last year it was David Fales, it was Trevor Siemian, it was Luke Falk. And Joe Flacco has really solidified that backup position for the Jets. So I thought that was a really good signing by them.
Interesting. All right. So talking about, you know, just talking about like his Perryman is expected back. So what does that mean for Crowder? Crowder, 5.5 receptions, 68.5 receiving yards. Over, yeah. Under.
I like over for both, because Perryman.
Yep.
One thing Perryman can do is he could stretch the field. And we're seeing that around the league. You know, we're seeing it with Robbie Anderson in Carolina. Ironically, the player that, you know, the Jets signed Perryman to replace Anderson. And when you can do that, you got to have a safety over the top, meaning that one of the two safety has to shade to the side of the field that you're going to have when Perryman's in the game. And that's going to create opportunities for Crowder. And again, Crowder could move the sticks. So look for a Flacco, Jamison Crowder sort of matchup. And again, I think this is going to be a closer game than people realize, because the Jets, I mean, when you're talking about Flacco with Perryman and Flacco with Crowder, that now you're talking about NFL sort of quality, something the Jets just haven't had most of the year due to injuries.
What about Smith in the passing game? Over under 2.5 receptions, over under 35.5 receiving yards. Seems to be some good chemistry there with him and Flacco.
I agree. I like the over there as well. So he's another young emerging player that, you know, again, you know, we talked about Slayton earlier for the Giants. I think Smith for the Jets is a young receiver that could be, you know, a contributor moving forward.
All right. What about in the rushing game? As we know, no Lev Bell, Frank Gore, over under 49.5 rushing yards. Or do you think we're going to get a heavy dose of P. Ryan?
Yeah, I'm going to go under on that. I love Frank. I'd hire him in any organization that I would be a part of. He has class and dignity that really transcends a whole program. He makes people around him better. He's demanding of his teammates, but I think it's going to be P. Ryan today. So I don't see a lot out of Frank Gore.
All right, on the opposite side, Ryan Fitzpatrick, over under 1.5 touchdown passes.
Over.
Yep. I love Preston Williams, by the way. Look at this one. 38.5 receiving yards. Come on.
Over.
Yeah, I know. And last but not least, Miles Gaskin, the running back, over under 60.5 rushing yards.
Yeah, I'm going to go under because I think they're going to try to get some of these other backs involved. Gaskins has done a good job for them. Wasn't probably what they had designed, you know, when you look at what they did in the offseason. So I'm going to say under. Maybe they're going to try to spread the ball a little bit more.
Interesting.